Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Auto Transport Intel. It is Wednesday. It is 3:30 p.m. Central Time, and that means it's time for DOT Compliance with your DOT guy, Brian Riker. Thank you all so much for adjusting the time for us today. And normally it's a noon Central Time show, but we just, you know, we had a busy schedule. Do me a favor, please do leave a like. And remember, you can grab that YouTube link, you can share it, copy, share, text it, email it, share it on social media, let people know. We're going to be live for 30 minutes, and Brian, your DOT guy, wants to help answer questions that you have. DOT, FMCSA, IRP, IFTA, ELD, you name it, and we want to talk about it. We're here to help with driver regulations, with questions and answers. And you know, you can go to autotransportintel.com and click on sign up, become an ATI insider, talk to Ty, get on the roundtable, get the email. And if you got a question, where did you get that idea? We were talking about that last night, and we want to help flesh out your ideas if you're looking to start up a business, whether it's dispatcher, broker, carrier, dealer. You're looking to expand your business and you've got questions. That's what we're here for. We want to help. So now it is time. It is 2 minutes after. We're going to end promptly in 28 minutes-ish. Brian, can you see me and hear me okay?
Yes, I can, Jay. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks so much for taking the time. We sure do appreciate it. And don't be shy. Go ahead and jump in the live chat. Carlos Braxton is here, ACB Logistics in the house. Carlos, how are you doing, by the way? Please let us know. And if you jump in the live chat, even if you don't have a question for Brian, feel free to share information. We've got exciting things like how we doing. And I'll tell you what, let's go ahead. I've got Fritz sent in a how we doing. And we do bet that you can't stump your DOT guy, Brian. If you see a stump and you think you've got one, send it in and we'll see what we can do. Here, let's get those. Let's go to how we do. And we love to talk about, this was started because, so many, veteran transporters are kind of worried about what's happening with wedge trailers that aren't loaded right. They get flipped over, everybody's insurance goes up, and so we don't want that to happen. So here's one. Fritz sent this in. How we doing?
So
is that a stinger? No, high mount. It's a high mount.
That's a high mount, and that's a junk hauler if I've ever seen one. My concerns here, besides the obvious, are we overweight? My concerns are not about damage on the car, because they're obviously junks going to a crusher, or they wouldn't load them that way. My concerns are when you're bouncing down the road, the cars underneath start to crush down a little bit, and the straps holding the cars up top come loose. If you're going to haul stacked cars like this for the crusher, then they need to just be crushed so you can haul them right. And there is actually a regulation that requires hauling crushed cars to throw a net or cargo tarp or something over them to prevent the debris from coming off. These aren't crushed yet. But my biggest concern with this, besides it looks awful, is overweight. And what happens when that white Lumina or Monte Carlo or whatever it is on the tail starts to crush down a little bit, and the straps that are holding that Toyota up top come loose.
Yeah, so for our podcast listeners, please describe what we're looking at.
Yes, I forget that we have a good podcast following.
Yeah.
We are looking at a dually pickup truck with what looks like an Appalachian three-car trailer. So it's meant to have one car up over the neck of the trailer and two cars on the deck of the trailer. And we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 cars on it. So there's three loaded properly. And then it looks like they took a forklift and they set a Chevy pickup truck balanced on the front windshield and hood of the middle car. and a Toyota, what's that, a Camry, balanced between the rear window of the middle car and the front window of the tail car. Obviously, cars going for scrap, but they're just balanced on there with a couple of straps thrown up and over the trunks and up and over the wheels, and nothing to hold them from shifting side to side or falling off if the vehicles underneath start to crush in and everything can loosen up. Not a good idea. And he's out in the hammer lane passing somebody.
So it seems like that, that pickup truck could get some bounce going on it.
Yeah, I see this often with scrap haulers, and the problem is the vehicle, especially when you got a heavy pickup truck on top of a light car, it starts to crush that sheet metal down a little bit, and with the condition of the roads we have today, it works the securement loose, and then these vehicles start flopping around. I'm pretty sure most motor carrier enforcement guys would cite this for insecure load, and they'd probably would find them for overweight as well. I could be wrong on the weight, but...
And that was going to be my question, is what's he looking at the scale?
At the scale, he's looking at, depending upon the state he's in, he's got rear overhang, which may or may not be legal. He may or may not... He's got enough axles to hold the weight of those five cars. Don't know what it's registered for or anything, so that's speculation. But
right.
If I was an officer, I would be checking the condition of those straps or chains that are securing the load, making sure they're tight. If you find even one that he can wiggle with his hand, it's an insecure load citation. So at best, he's looking at insecure load, and this is going to definitely draw attention if a motor carrier officer sees it.
Especially, we know that, or I think we know that, wedge trailers get looked at more. I don't know. I'm coming up with more questions of how often does the driver do this run, and I wonder where this is. I don't know. I don't have enough information about it, but I don't think I've seen this maneuver.
I've seen it on four car rollbacks too, where they'll stack a second set of cars on them, but this is definitely something I've seen up in the Northeast.
Okay, so there we go. So the answer is, the question is, how we doing? The answer is?
Not too good.
Carlos says that he's got balls as big as Texas. Devin says hello. Good afternoon, everyone. Victory Lap Transport. What's going on? Carlos does have a question. My new truck has 33,000 GVWR, and my trailer is 25.9. Do I have to register the combo at 58.9? I will never be over 55,000.
No, you do not have to go and register it for what the combined is between the two. You just have to register it for enough to cover the tare weight of truck trailer plus the weight of your cargo. So if you want to stay at 54.999 like most folks do so that they avoid that heavy highway use tax, nothing wrong with that at all. We ran four axle semis that could have had a gross of 65,000, and we ran them at 54.9 all the time. So nothing wrong with that. Just be aware that if you happen to exceed whatever your registered weight is, you can get an overweight ticket for being over your registered weight.
Let's do, thank you, Brian. Let's do, let me share my next. Okay, we had this come in. This was a question, really good question, and you gave a thorough answer, but I want to cover it live. Okay, question is, do I need a DOT number to be an auto transport dispatch? Jay, I've enjoyed the YouTube videos, very informative. I would really like to get into the auto transport business. I was booking loads for a driver, but things didn't work out on his side, so I'm no longer booking loads for him. The auto transport biz looks to be more specialized and is a business I'm going to pursue. Do I need to get a DOT number for this business as well to be an auto transport dispatcher?
this is such a hot topic right now. And the answer is, it depends. And I'm not trying to be deliberately obtuse, but it depends. The long and short of it is, currently, and I say currently because there's been a challenge filed by the Transportation Intermediaries Association, which is the group that represents brokers, challenging the legality of independent dispatchers. Currently, as long as you are what they call a bona fide agent of the motor carrier you're representing, you can do this. And there is no rule, and I get a lot of pushback on this, but there is no rule that says you have to be a dispatcher for one and only one company, or even need to be an employee of that company. The rules are, under the current setup, you cannot have any freight of your own that you go out and solicit and collect and then try to find drivers to haul it. That is brokering, no doubt about it. You can be calling looking for freight, but you have to be doing it at the request of and on behalf of one motor carrier. And most people call them a driver. Normally, it's the independent owner operator that uses a dispatcher. One carrier at a time. So if you're going to call ABC Brokerage and you have three customers, on that phone call, you can only ask about loads for customer number one. And then you have to hang up and call back when you're representing customer number two. And the same thing for number three. Same if you're using a load board in the modern world. You can't go searching for loads, take them, and then call up your drivers and say, hey, you want this one? You want that one? I booked it for you. You have to have the carrier in mind that you're going to give that load to, or you're booking that load on behalf of. You have to have that agreement in place so that you're acting on behalf of that carrier. You with me so far?
I am with you so far.
And the only other, so if you don't meet that definition, if you have a pool of freight of your own, if you have relationships with Joe's Chevy and Tom's Ford and Bill's Ram, then you're a broker. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. The freight has to belong to the carriers you're representing. And the only other thing that gets complicated is freight forwarding. Say you book a 9-car load, but you know the driver you booked it for only has a 3-car wedge. You can't just give him 3 of the cars and then find 2 other 3-car wedges to move the other 6 cars between them. That would be brokering and or freight forwarding. So again, it all comes down to the intent at the time. And there is a little scuttlebutt about collecting payment. You're allowed to submit invoices on behalf of your carriers. You're allowed to do carrier packets. You can have a power of attorney. In fact, I strongly recommend you have a signed agreement that makes them an agent, or makes you an agent of them, and a power of attorney to sign on behalf of your carrier. That way you are legitimately a bona fide agent. But I'm getting all sorts of background noise, Jay.
Are you? Okay. Yes. I don't hear that. It's not
coming
through.
It went away.
Okay.
It went away. So,
okay.
But payment, you cannot collect and handle the money yourself. Then you need a fiduciary responsibility to the carrier, meaning you need a surety bond and you would need broker authority if you're collecting the cash, taking your 10% out of it and passing the rest on. So you have to do the work. You can submit the invoicing and the proof of delivery and stuff so the carrier can get paid, but then you have to let the carrier write you a check for your fees when you're done. That is my understanding of it from the, and I'm not an attorney, but this is from the attorneys I've spoken to about it, from the regulations as I understand them, from the complaint that TIA has made against dispatch services, and freight has to belong to the customer. You can't have your own pool of freight, and you can't handle the customer's money. That's the three key points.
So, okay, so to break this down, okay, so let me ask you a couple follow-ups, is that, let's say you are a dispatcher, and you are following those rules where you're booking for one carrier at a time, and is there a technicality that you can be hung up on just because you're using the term dispatcher as opposed to broker?
Currently, no. But it raises some red flags, which means you may get looked at harder. You may get brokers that don't want to do business with you because members of the TIA, they are strongly opposed to independent dispatchers. Some of them offer independent dispatching services as part of their brokerage, so they feel that you're taking a piece of their pie, if you will. So no, you can't get hung up on a technicality yet, but you can get looked at. You may have to have that contract to prove that you have the legal authority to enter into an agreement to take that load and bind your customer, being the driver slash motor carrier, to haul that load. But you'll run into this problem mostly with the large brokers.
How about if you are the term bona fide dispatcher, I know gets used legally. Let's say you are a dispatcher and you are doing it the right way. Do you need a DOT number and or broker's license?
If you're doing it the way I described earlier, then no, because you are not a motor carrier, so you do not need a DOT number for that or an MC number, and you are not a broker, so you do not need a broker authority, which would be an MC number, and you're not a freight forwarder. So no, you need absolutely nothing except the confidence of your customers and the ability to sell their services on their behalf.
So now that we've got, we see some light at the end of the tunnel, you just have to make sure you do not cross over into brokering by taking the money on behalf of the carrier. And you need to make sure that you don't book loads that then you're sending to two different carriers, one or two different carriers at the same time. Right?
Correct.
And what are the other basics there that we need to make sure we don't do?
And you don't split up or combine loads that then end up on different motor carriers. So we know there's a lot of onesies and twosies in this business. You might take three separate loads, air quotes, to build one load for your driver. You just want to make sure that you keep it straight. The cars you book for that driver actually end up on that driver's truck. There's all sorts of legal ramifications if you don't. If the carrier's name doesn't match the name on the bill of lading when there's an accident, insurance isn't going to pay out for it. Since you're not insured or bonded, it might come back to you. There could be legal action from the USDOT for brokering without a license there. So the bottom line is make sure the freight matches the company and you don't have any. These independent dispatchers that advertise, we have loads waiting and can keep you loaded. They are a broker, not a dispatcher.
That's brokering. That's right.
And they're the ones causing the problem for the honest independent dispatcher. They're the reason that OOIDA, TIA, and others are pushing for a rulemaking to clearly define what a dispatcher is. Because right now, a dispatcher is like personal conveyance on your logbook. It is the absence of a prohibition, which is my favorite legal premise. It's the absence of a prohibition, meaning it must be permitted. So as long as you don't meet the definition of a broker, a carrier, or a freight forwarder, and you're acting on behalf of a motor carrier, then you must be legal to do what you're doing. That is really the way the concept works.
Right. Acting on behalf of a carrier,
carrier
gets the money, the carrier has the load, you're acting on behalf of a carrier.
Yes. What to make it really simple, what a bona fide agent, which is the fancy term meaning you're acting on behalf of, what a independent dispatcher can do for a carrier is no more than what they could do if they were an employee of that carrier sitting in that carrier's office. Think of yourself as you have eight part-time jobs with eight different motor carriers that you represent. You can only work one of your part-time jobs at a time. So it's like working for McDonald's and Burger King. You're not going to make a Big Mac over at the Burger King. So you have to just think about it that way. Compartmentalize everything you do and only represent one carrier at a time.
Good stuff, Brian. Devin asked in the live chat, hey, Brian, just registered my truck yesterday in Virginia to register my truck for intrastate. What's my next step? I already got the DOT number, already got the medical card, already got my trailer registered in Maine, and I'm non-CDL.
All right. Well, then you will not need fuel tax if you're staying intrastate only within the state of Virginia. And you're non-CDL, you don't need a portion license plate. I don't know off the top of my head if Virginia has their version of a public utility commission that requires a number. I don't believe they do. So you may be good for intrastate only freight in Virginia. Now, let's not get confused, though, just because you don't physically haul any other part of the load that comes into or leaves the state of Virginia doesn't mean that you don't need federal authority as well. So it's always good to have your federal, your U.S., your ICC, yeah, let me slow down, your MC number. I'm going back 30 years ago. It's always best to have your MC number, even if you physically stay in the state of Virginia, because Virginia borders several other states. You've got a bunch of auctions where cars come into from out of state. So you could, it could be argued you're doing interstate commerce even if you never leave the state. But it sounds like you got it all together. If you have your DOT number, I don't believe Virginia is one of the states with a DMV or a state DOT type number. I'd have to look that up and get back to you. Put a note in the comment section, and I'll try to look up and answer that later tonight.
Perfect. Let's see here. Do I need an MC number for intrastate? Just a follow-up there.
Just intrastate only. If you purely, truly meet the definition of intrastate, no, you do not need an MC number from the U.S. DOT. That is only if you're engaging in interstate commerce. But remember, interstate commerce is based on the origin, destination, or intent of the shipment. So if it came from out of state or out of country, or you know it's going out of state or out of country, then it is interstate, even if you only moved the Virginia portion. So if you went to the inland port in Virginia, picked up a port vehicle, and brought it down to somewhere else within the state, you may think that's intra-state commerce, but because the vehicle came from a port and came from out of the state, it's interstate. So that's the only caveat to saying with absolute certainty that no, you do not need an MC number, is just make sure you take the proper freight.
Brian's business is Fleet Compliance Solutions, LLC. Fleet Compliance Solutions, LLC is a transportation compliance specialist business that can help you navigate the complex regulatory environment of today. I put some links in the live chat. If you want to contact Brian, do visit fleetcompliancesolutions.net. And also feel free, if you don't already have the podcast, the link to the podcast is in the live chat. If you missed the live show and you have a question, you can email your question to Brian on air at yourdotguide.com. We only have a few minutes left. The show goes so fast. And I just want to, let's see, I'm going to share the screen again. We've got, okay, fleets, OEMs invest in seat driving technology to improve driver's comfort. How do you feel about this one?
Technology has its place in the industry. So a driver that's comfortable will theoretically be more alert. I'm not sure exactly what they're talking about in seat technology. What do you have highlighted in that red box?
Let's read that. I know. I found it interesting. I just, it's curveball. Here, I'm trying to stump Brian live. The latest truck seats now offer increased adjustability, advanced materials, and more effective suspension to increase driver comfort. Higher-end cab comfort is also a perk advertised by fleets to attract and retain drivers.
I know a couple guys on the ATE Facebook page this would make excited, because there's a running joke with them asking for pictures of the seat in their truck. But I'm all for a comfortable seat. As most of the audience knows, I still am an active driver. I work with an equipment sales place, and so I deliver sold units. In fact, I'm sitting in a brand new 2020 9-car hauler right now that I'm getting ready to deliver to a customer up in the Northeast on Friday. So I'm all for it because I remember the days when I started driving 29 years ago, I got my Class A CDL. I remember when I started driving, we had mid-back spring suspension seats and some of the old beat-up trucks I was driving. I'm all for comfortable seat, comfortable cab. I'm not necessarily a big fan of the nanny technologies that we have, but that's not what we're talking about here. A comfortable truck, you do not get as fatigued, you can pay better attention. I'm all for that. I think it's a great investment because, honestly, today's truck driver is not the truck driver of my generation or my father's generation that wants to be out here in the truck and hear the truck and feel the truck. We want something comfortable. So I understand that it is a good recruiting point.
Well, you asked for it and you got it. Smart steering reduces at the wheel effort. How about this one?
I've got a little mixed feelings on that. I love the idea of my arm not being quite as fatigued at the end of the day, especially if you drive on some of these heavy truck routes that are rutted enough, it throws the vehicle all over the lane. But here we have something where the computer's taking some of the control away from you. It's like the automatic lane centering, lane assist that Freightliner offers. I'm not sure I'm sold on this Volvo package yet. If it has a way to easily override it, I'm okay with it. But I'll have to drive one and get back to you.
They're really, I believe what I'm reading and seeing is, yes, the move towards more technology in the cab just keeps on going.
Yes. And there's going to come a point where the technology becomes distracting, not helpful. Some older seasoned drivers right now already say that the technology is distracting and not helpful. All the bells and whistles and dings going on and off and the automatic braking, mistaking an overpass and slamming the brakes on. And I tend to agree with them on that to an extent. So there needs to be a balance between technology and good old-fashioned skills so we don't end up like the airline pilots when there's an emergency, they forget how to fly the airplane because they're so used to the plane doing everything for itself. And the same thing is coming down the line for us in trucking.
That's actually, you made a good analogy there. Yeah, so are pilots highly assisted when they
fly?
They are.
Yes, they are, especially commercial airline pilots. In fact, a couple of years ago, there was a bad crash. I believe it was Los Angeles. It was a foreign airliner. I want to say it was Korean Air. I don't hold me to that. But they even had a senior trainer in the cockpit on this aircraft, and they all misinterpreted the instructions on the automatic glide slope approach. That's what brings the plane down and hits the mark on the runway, and they missed the runway, and it ended up being a serious fatal accident because none of them, they all had extreme confidence in the computer and the airplane. None of them thought to actually pay attention and say, we're going to miss that mark and pull up. And that happens. There's a lot of near misses because the pilots are either mentally fatigued because they're not actually driving. They get zoned out, and when an alarm happens, they aren't ready to react. Or they don't have the skills when the computer can't do automatic trim control and everything on the aircraft to actually fly the craft and land it. So, there is a problem with that.
That's really interesting. I think I've got trucking technology startup raises $150 million. I mean, the point of this article, I think, was just that, we're seeing more and more money, and even like I don't know if it's college graduates or what it is, but there's more people working on improving the use of technology and the operator. It's not backing off, so it seems like, I don't know. Do you think a younger driver could be more on board with all of this assistance?
I believe the average younger driver would be because they're used to it in their life. They don't already have 2 million miles of safe driving in a traditional truck without all of the automated technologies. So yes, and I believe that this actually attracts a certain group of people to be a truck driver because they want that. And so for those that want it, I'm all for it as long as it is user selectable. I just don't like anything that is mandated on me. Let me make the choice whether today is a good day to use automatic emergency braking and lane assistance or not. Maybe I'm in an area that I know there's a lot of distractions for it. Maybe I'm in an area where I can use every blind spot indicator and help I could get to pay attention. So I can support it as long as it's user selectable.
Mandate. I like that. That is a good way. That's a good key word here. I'm going to write that one down. I think that might end up in the title. I'll have to work on that. But once again, Brian, thank you so much for your information. I want to thank everybody that joined the live chat. Again, if you missed the live chat, do go ahead and put your comment below, your question, your comment. And you can also email Brian direct on air at yourdotguide.com. And that's going to do it.
We'll be back on time next Wednesday, noon Central. I'll be coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, where I am presenting at the American Towman Tow Expo, Texas. It's a two-day event, Friday and Saturday. I'm doing a couple seminars on defensive driving and DOT compliance for the towing industry. But hey, if any of my car haul friends are in San Antonio, you can get into the show for free. You just can't get into the seminars for free. There is a charge for that. Come on down. It's at the Gonzales Convention Center right on the Riverwalk. It's a beautiful city. Haven't been there in a couple of years, but I'm looking forward to it. So I'll be coming to you live from the airport in San Antonio next Wednesday.
Awesome. So if you are able to, maybe next Wednesday, we can share some tidbits as you prep for... What day is your presentation next week?
I have presentations on Friday and Saturday.
Okay, cool. So maybe we
can I'll send you some information.
I would love that. Send it to me. We'll get a sneak preview. And Brian, thank you so much for everything you do. I really do appreciate it.
You're welcome, Jay. I know you got to run. I got to run too.
Okay, we'll see you next Wednesday. Thanks, everybody. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.